that God and the connection of this chapter to the whole book? Well, I think if you recall, he's really in the book looking at various people's responses to the holiness of God. He started with his own, then he looked at Isaiah, he looked at Peter, looked at the disciples, and then he started looking at historical figures. I think was it last time we saw Martin Luther's response to the holiness of God, and now really looking at Jonathan Edwards and his teaching and response to the holiness of God. So I think that's how it fits into the book. He's gone through biblical characters, he's looked at himself, now he's looking at some further historical characters. So, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God is perhaps the most famous sermon ever preached in America. It's filled, says Sproul, with graphic images of the fury of divine wrath and the horror of the relentless punishment of the wicked in hell. It's a sermon that all present who heard it spoke about for the rest of their lives. It wasn't just powerful in delivery, it was powerful in its effects, with a number of people convicted and converted. Now, that kind of sermon doesn't really fit our upbeat, self-improvement focused type of sermon. Dr. Sproul outlines the kind of thinking that's common in our day, just outlined there under B. If there is a God, he's not holy. If he is holy, he's not just. If he's just, well, he's not angry. And overall, just everyone trying to convince themselves that love and mercy will override all considerations of holiness and justice. But Dr. Sproul responds, but if God is holy at all, if God has even an ounce of character in his, of justice in his character, how could he be anything else but angry with us? So then he looks at Jonathan Edwards' thinking in contrast to our own or our cultures. And he says, Edwards understood the nature of God's holiness. And Edwards' consuming need was to preach about God's holiness, to preach it vividly, emphatically, convincingly, and powerfully. Why? Not to frighten people, but out of compassion. Dr. Sproul says he was not concerned with laying a guilt trip on his people, but with awakening them to the peril they faced if they remained unconverted. And so he used these graphic images from the Bible, they weren't made up, graphic images to impress upon people their horrendous danger with a view to them seeking salvation. And so we had that illustration of walking on slippery places, walking across hell on a rotten bridge, arrows that fly at noonday, God's bow bent, aiming the arrows of his wrath at sinful hearts, rushing water behind floodgates ready to open and overwhelm. And he sums up Edwards' teaching by saying God's wrath is divine, not merely human. God's wrath is fierce, not moderate. And God's wrath is everlasting. It has no end. And Dr. Sproul says the tragedy is that even that being true, we continue to be easy about the future punishment of the wicked, despite the clear warnings of Scripture and the sober teaching of Jesus. What is our reaction to this truth? Is it fear? Is it anger? Is it scorn? If so, we hate the wrath of God. And if we hate the wrath of God, it's because we hate God himself. And we've created an idol out of our own imaginations. A God with no wrath is not God, but an idol we create. I think one of the emphases of Dr. Sproul in that chapter is not just this is an important truth and doctrine and teaching for the unconverted, but also for the converted, primarily to motivate us to concern for the lost. And then he turns secondly to God in the hands of angry sinners. And he's looking here at our hatred towards God in this sermon entitled Men Naturally God's Enemies. And in the book he highlights a number of verses from the Bible which teach that natural enmity in our hearts. And he says, we are enemies of God, inwardly sworn to his ultimate destruction. And he argues, if we did love God by nature, the central theme of the New Testament would not be reconciliation. And so he asks, where is our hostility revealed? People say, well, I don't hate God, but he says, well, hear how it's revealed. In our lack of esteem for God, our lack of devotion to God, our lack of delight in God, our lack of worship of God, our lack of closeness with God, and our lack of meditation on God. So he's saying it's not as if we're, you know, lobbing bombs at God. It's not as if we're trying to, you know, machine gun him to death. It's not that enmity is usually manifested in these ways, but it's manifested in these, you might say, more subtle ways. We think, of course, of atheists who lob verbal bombs and shoot verbal bullets at God. But he's saying, yeah, there are ways we can do it too. He says our attitude is not mere indifference, but malice toward God. By nature, the love of God is not in us. And again, it's not as if that's manifest, that's evident, it's visible, audible, tangible in people's lives, every day of their lives. No, I mean, people can sort of live many days without thinking hateful thoughts of God, but it really comes out when God crosses a person's will. I think that's where it's most manifested. You see these more passive forms of enmity, this lack of esteem, devotion, delight and worship, but it becomes active when God does cross a person's will, when God does something or does not do something that somebody wanted done or didn't want done, and then we see or hear the natural enmity come out of the heart. So our attitude is one of malice. God, he says, is our mortal enemy because he represents the highest possible threat to our sinful desires. They said, but surely as Christians, this isn't true of us, is it? We're Christians. We are lovers of God. Yeah, that's true and that's wonderful. God has put love to God that is unnatural, is supernatural in our hearts. But we must remember, he says, that we still struggle against our natural human nature, which was not annihilated. He's saying that nature that hated God, yes, alongside it has come a new nature that now loves God. And this old nature is shrinking under the impact and influence of this new nature, but it's still there to some degree in every single Christian and will be to the end of our days. And so it is still true that we have a struggle against this enmity in our hearts. Again, you think of these more passive ways. We have to plead guilty, and I'll come back to that shortly. And so then he looks at different types of theology, which really have different views of the holiness of God. Pelagianism. It's named after a heretic, Pelagius, in the 4th century. Didn't believe in miracles, Christ's deity, the atonement, and certainly those who follow him. It's modern day liberalism, basically. Then there's what's called semi-Pelagianism, which, you know, says good things about God's holiness, God's sovereignty, but still believes that we have the ability to make the decision to be born again. And then he talks about Augustinianism, which is the kind of theology we believe the Bible teaches, named after Augustine, which sees grace as central to theology because we are spiritually impotent without the assistance of a merciful God. So he's looking at these sinners with all their hatred of God, all their enmity against God, and then he looks at, here are people who now love God. What's happened? He says, what's happened is Augustinianism, not semi-Pelagianism. What's happened here is not these people woke up one day and said, well, I'm going to decide to love God now. No, he's saying God in sovereign grace came and he put that in the heart. He and he alone. It was not our decision. Our decision follows that, is a response to that. I think I remember Pastor Martin actually in a series on the 5 points of Calvinism using this illustration. He talks about how everyone loves ice cream. Every kid loves ice cream. Well, you know, 99% of kids love ice cream. 99% of kids hate spinach. They just hate it. And you can't, you know, a kid doesn't decide, well, I'm going to love spinach now. And I'm going to hate ice cream. You can't actually decide that, can you? It's just the hatred and the love is there. And what happens in conversion is God comes and takes away the love of ice cream and gives you a love for spinach. Not the best illustration, because, of course, grace and faith and Christ is far better than spinach. But the point is, we can't just decide to change such fundamental parts of our nature. We can change some habits with some practice and discipline and some accountability maybe from others, but we can't change this. Only God can. So again, this study of this doctrine should make us all the more worship and adore the sovereign grace of God. He says, loving a holy God is beyond our moral power. To love a holy God requires grace enough, strong enough to pierce our hardened hearts and awaken our moribund souls. And that's really the end of the chapter. In summary, let me just focus on this ways in which we hate God. I actually touched on this in a sermon recently as well. We're going through the Heidelberg Catechism. I can't remember which one it was. But let me just repeat some of the points I made there. How do we, believers and unbelievers, manifest, show hatred of God? I think the first way is by denying him, denying his existence, or denying, like Peter, denying that we know him. And that can be verbally, or it can be with a lack of verbals. A lack of confession, a lack of standing up for what is right. Secondly, we belittle him, but we ignore him. We sideline him in our lives. We don't talk to him. We don't listen to him. Therefore, belittling, shrinking him. Or even worse, we contradict him. We know his word, we know his will, and we go against his word and will. Either verbally or in our actions. We disobey him similarly, just blatantly, knowingly, stubbornly, and persistently doing what we know he forbids. What's that but enmity? If you love me, keep my commandments. Fifthly, we insult him by speaking or thinking evil of him. We think of maybe some acts of God's providence in our lives or our children's lives, loved ones' lives, and we think harshly of God, which is effectively insulting him, or we take God's name in vain. We sing psalms and we pray prayers and we speak at family worship, we read the Bible, but we're not really thinking about God. It's just habits, just forms, going through the motions. It's taking God's name in vain or lightly. We blame him, sixthly. We accuse him of ill will towards us or unfairness or injustice. We refuse him. We refuse his help. We refuse his assistance. We refuse his hand in our lives. We refuse his salvation even. Eighthly, we distort him. We might think of God in a distorted way, not in a biblical way. We maybe have a distorted view of God's mercy or of God's love or of God's salvation. Maybe we only focus on his holiness, his wrath, his justice, or only focus on his love, his grace, his kindness. To do so is to distort the biblical picture of God. Ninthly, we use him. We expect him to come to our aid when we're really, really desperate, but ignore him all the other times. Or tenthly, we take from him, and that's all we do. We just take and take and take and take and never give maybe a word of praise or thanks or service in return. So in different ways, we are people who take God in our hands, as it were, and treat him with anger and enmity. God in the hands of angry sinners. And it's really, when you think of these things, it's a wonder, isn't it, that we exist at all. That he allows us to do this and be like this. So there were a few questions at the end of this chapter. The first one was, how do you respond to Jonathan Edwards' sermon? Is it compassionate, do you think? He says it is, or Dr. Sproul says it is, but is it? Secondly, how does understanding God's wrath help you to honour him as a holy God? Some people do say, well, you preach God's wrath, it makes me think bad thoughts of God. And I don't want that, so I don't want to hear about God's wrath. It turns people away from God. The third question was, in what ways do you need God to help you love him? So Jonathan Edwards' sermon, is it compassionate? How does understanding God's wrath help you honour him as a holy God? And in what ways do you need God to help you love him?